It's Sal Capaccio.
Sal
Capaccio.
Sal
Capaccio.
Sal
Capaccio.
Sal
Capaccio.
Sal
Capaccio.
Sal
Capaccio.
Sal
Capaccio.
On WGR.
Can I then, after talking to Daryl Ryder, what he said, close this? I mean, I'm not even kidding. Captivating Bernie Kosar supplemental draft Wikipedia page. Can I just, is that over?
He did not seem to think it was very likely.
He said the head coach like just sort of blasted away at the idea. I'm like, is that a good source? Are you sure that would be somebody? Does that have to be true?
I mean, he's new. I don't know how much sway he has over the organization, Monken.
I have read this page at least 10 times in my life.
And still I'm not, you're
not
sure
what happened.
I'm still
confused. Right. How did the Bills end up losing the first overall pick of the 86 draft? I guess that was one thing the Browns got back. I don't know. The last time we talked to Sal, I asked him a trivia question. He hung up. I don't want to start with a...
Right, everybody. Everybody was mad at you about
quiz
that.
Quiz Sal.
That's right. Last week was ended ugly.
It's, you know, but I feel like Sal would like this if he hasn't already sort of mastered the subject, this supplemental draft history with the Bills and the Browns, that Kosar thing. It's really good. Bulldog, Sal, if you didn't know, Bulldog grew up in fear of Bud Grant, the Vikings coach. And Grant is prominent here. He traded up with Houston to get a look at Kosar, but then Kosar had to finish school because he was an underclassman and you couldn't draft underclassmen in the mid-80s.
Back then, yeah.
So he had to come up with the credits, and then he did, but he didn't sign the paperwork. And the anyway. Sal, how was your weekend?
It was good. We had a lot of baseball. It's time of year. It's that age group, you know?
It's pretty dry. It's playable right
now.
You're
right, yeah.
Good for you.
It is very playable, yeah. A couple doubleheaders, actually. Travel, house, modified for school. Like, it's there's just a lot right now at this age group, you know? And you guys know how it goes, but it's awesome. I'm loving it, actually. So this is our Cooperstown year. Have you guys, you know, you've gone to Cooperstown? Part of the baseball thing there?
No, we did not. Our family didn't pursue baseball aggressively enough to be a team. Like, you know, there were travel teams from the same league you're in, right? Are you still with Herndon North Park? Or are you somewhere else now?
Yes.
Yeah. And, so, but we never played travel or got to like a Cooperstown level. So, but I knew about it. Yeah.
I mean, I don't know how long our league has been going, but it's a big deal. It's a really big deal when you're 12 years old, your last true little league year before you move up to the big diamond and senior field and all that. And Cooperstown has two different parks. It's Dreams Park and All-Star Village. I believe we're doing All-Star Village, but others have done Dreams, and they've told me about it. And it's a week long in August. And you go there, and, like, I have to stay, like, in Army barracks with a bunch of 12-year-olds because I'm a coach for a week. So that'll be interesting. And you play – you're guaranteed, like, 7 games. They play all times of the day and night, under the lights, on the turf. The fences are, like, really short, like 180 maybe, because they want kids to hit home runs, and then they get the ball engraved. It's a pretty cool experience, I guess, everything.
Double Day Field. It's beautiful. Yeah. We never played there either. Like, my son was not in a little league
organization. Yeah, I think
organization
what Sal's talking about isn't going to be a Double Day Field either. That's the place, that's the field, like, in town, like, right by the
right at the Hall of Fame.
Yeah, these are complexes outside of town.
Okay.
That have multi-fields and the barracks.
Well, you drive by it and you see how many fields down that hill. I mean, there's a lot of them, so I would think that would be part of this.
Yeah.
I don't know, but we never did that either. I was talking to my son about his baseball days yesterday. And so he was left-handed and really fast. And he was often late to the ball. So on that smaller field, like, this is your last year, that smaller field, he would put the ball in play to the third base side every time, and they would never be able to throw him out. And then the next year, he got a little bit better, and the field got bigger, and it was a very different story. Because, like, now he was hitting ground balls to second. And he was out. So we longed for that smaller field where he would hit the ball just like kind of like Ichiro could do on command. But unlike Ichiro, my son could not bomb home runs in batting practice. Mm-hmm. Like that's where they were different. Or Boggs, right?
Your son and my son sound very similar in everything you just said.
Is that right?
And but I'll be honest, like right now we're going, it's really weird because we're going from the big field to the small field on almost a nightly basis from the modified team to the little league team.
Yeah, it's very different. The whole sport is different when you make that jump.
Yep.
All right, Sal. Well, we didn't talk yesterday. The big news, Myles Garrett, then, of course, A.J. Brown as well. Before we get into some Bill stuff, let's cover both of those. I liked, you know, Jeremy had a point on Twitter this morning about, imagine 2 years ago finding out Micah Parsons, Myles Garrett, Trey Hendrickson, almost Max Crosby, it was intended, would change teams. You would think for all the time we've spent on the Bills and the time the Bills have spent at trying to figure out edge rusher, they might have been one of those, you know, yeah, right. destination teams. Did not happen. Rams-Browns, like, how do you parse the Garrett move?
I mean, if you're the Cleveland Browns, you're a Cleveland Browns fan, of course you don't want to trade Myles Garrett. I mean, who would want to do that? You want to retire in your uniform. He's great. He's a Hall of Famer. But business-wise, they made the right move here. I mean, he's 30 years old. As good as he is, and he's going to be for a couple more years, by the time you might get good, which with the Browns, who knows when that could be, and it just hasn't happened, is he really going to help you and be impactful? So they got a lot back for him, and they got Jared Verse, who's a really excellent young pass rusher, a first-round pick that you can have now as ammunition to try and get a quarterback if maybe this year it doesn't work out, Shedeur Sanders, Deshaun Watson coming back. I mean, if you don't like what you have more ammunition to get one. I know it sucks. I get it. Like, you don't want to do that. But this is not an apples-for-apples trade. This isn't who won the trade. This isn't a hockey trade when we talk about hockey. This is a trade between two different teams at two completely different points of their organizational, you know, build or timeline. And on the other side, the Rams are going for a Super Bowl. I mean, who wouldn't want your team, if you're going to a Super Bowl, to try and trade for Myles Garrett, the best defensive player arguably still in the sport today? I mean, that's what they're trying to do. They have Matt Stafford in the very end of his career here. They have a good look at it. They're already one of the favorites, if not the favorite, to win a Super Bowl. I think I like this trade for both sides.
Yeah, you know, I think a good thought experiment is if you had Jared Verse on your team, right? The Bills had Jared Verse on their team and still wanted to make a trade like this. Like, how behind it would you get? Because the case to keep Verse, I mean, I know he's not Myles Garrett. He's not the defensive player of the year. But I don't know. Like, I like that the Rams were bold here. It's very much their MO. And so it's a go-for-it move. I just think there's an interesting conversation inside how much they help themselves, really. Like, how much does Garrett move the meter versus, you know, snap in, snap out what they were getting from Jared Verse. I'm sure they've done that work. And, you know, the answer for them must lead them to, okay, let's make this trade, not just Verse for Garrett, but we'll throw in all this other stuff too that has, you know, varying value, but a first-round pick is included. I don't know that every Bills fan would be like, yeah, I'm glad we traded Jared Verse and all this other stuff for Myles Garrett.
I think on the surface that is correct. I think that if you get yourself to how great Myles Garrett is and maybe then that one missing piece to get to a Super Bowl, you could certainly talk yourself into it. But I think what you're saying is right, which is, couldn't we still do that with Jared Verse, right?
Right.
Like, couldn't we still win the Super Bowl with Jared Verse? You probably could. But, man, Myles Garrett is just – as good as Jared Verse is, Myles Garrett is unbelievable. He is – maybe the greatest pass rusher who ever lived. Honestly, I don't say that lightly. We had Bruce Smith here, right? Like, this guy is unbelievable, and he's still at the top of his game at 30 years old. That's not super old, you know? But if you, at that age, by the way, that position, I mean, you can still play, you know, well into your 30s and be very effective, especially if you keep your body right, which this guy does. I mean, at the age of 29, he set the NFL record with 23 sacks. Since his rookie year, he's never had less than double digits. I just think if you have to, to your point, Bulldog, the Rams have to firmly believe he really is that much of a gap.
Yeah.
And are you going, what are you going to pay Verse then when his contract comes up on top of it? You know, you got to pay Garrett here coming up, I guess, or whatever his contract entails. Mm-hmm. I haven't done all that work, but you will have to pay Verse eventually anyway, which might be a conversation as part of this.
Yeah. I think the next level chess piece of this move, and I'm not about to segue into talking about how I read yesterday that they're drafting Ty Simpson when they did, was already thinking about giving up a number one pick in this transaction. But if they can get, if trading for Myles Garrett gets Aaron Donald back for them, which has made the rounds today, then that might put it over the edge for me to say it's definitely worth doing. Because if you get that dude back on what I would assume would be a pretty team-friendly deal, because there's got to be cap constraints eventually there, even for the Rams, you've got two former defensive players of the year on your defensive line, which is incredible. I'm assuming
I don't know
that award at least once, but I'm not positive.
I don't know, and I guess the question would be, did they think that could happen before they make the deal, or right. did that start to percolate after? I'm not sure. Now, look, Aaron Darnold is 35 years old, and he hasn't played in 3 years.
Mm-hmm.
I wouldn't assume he'd be the same Aaron Donald, but, you know, he's still he was a great player. This is – I don't think if you're the fan – you're right, Bulldog. Like, I totally respect what you're saying. Like, if you're a fan of the Rams, you're like, you know, I don't really love getting up Verse. And even though Garrett is great, like, I only got him for X amount of years. I could have Verse for even longer, and he's really darn good. And I gave up, you know, all these draft picks. But I think at least you have to – say they are absolutely trying to win the Super Bowl this year, and yep. who doesn't want their team to do that when they have a look at it?
I'm mostly devil's advocating over here, honestly, if I'm being real honest, because I love a team declare. I became a fan of the Minnesota Wild this year because they traded for Quinn Hughes. It's not like, okay, we're stuck at this level. We're always at this level. Let's do something about it. And I know it didn't work, but I still loved that they did that.
You know, even the Sabres, if they'd gotten maybe Parayko, would have been some version of that, just at the deadline. But still, mm-hmm. like, go be aggressive. This is a chance. You have a chance here.
You got a window.
I like it. How about AJ Brown, Sal, going to New England? This is one that we've had a lot of time to think about, and maybe assuming it was going to happen for much of that time. What about it? How big of a upgrade is this for New England? How much scarier do they become?
It's huge. I mean, it's the exact thing the Bills did when they traded for Stephon Diggs. They had a quarterback who was really good going into his third year on a rookie contract. And you go out and get him a stud wide receiver. And when the Bills did that, Stephon Diggs was 27. A.J. Brown is 28. I mean, you should have him for a while here. You will have to pay Drake May over the next couple years, however they structure that contract. You might as well go now and try and do this. And that's what the Bills did. It really worked out. They got Josh Allen the guy. Stephon Diggs was great for Josh Allen when he came to Buffalo. I think A.J. Brown's going to be really good for Drake May. But I think overall their wide receiver group, even without Diggs now, is much, much better than it was last year. Romeo Doubs is a good player. I know Mac Hollins had an injury at the end. He did some really nice things for them. Kyle Williams they drafted. I like DeMario Douglas. I think they've really upgraded their receiving core. And boy, do they have a really good third-year quarterback who, oh, by the way, was a finalist for the MVP and went to the Super Bowl last year, right? I mean, so you're doing everything right by him right now before you have to pay him. There's still questions on their offensive line. There are still questions about their running game and even getting to the passer, but every team has some questions. I like this a lot for them, for New England. I think they did it right here. And they didn't give up a first-round pick next year, but they did in a couple years, and that is actually interesting. I actually think that maybe New England should have given up next year's first-round pick. Maybe not in a couple years. Maybe in a couple years because you do have to pay Drake May and you got to start supplementing that with younger players. Mm-hmm. Maybe that was a year to not trade away your first-rounder.
Is there any level of buyer beware for you? How high? Maybe there's probably some. There might be some with almost any player, even one with almost a spotless resume. How much buyer beware would you have about A.J. Brown?
I would have some. I mean, he wore out his welcome in Philly, so to speak. I don't know if that was the case necessarily in Tennessee. There were things going on, but obviously the GM didn't want him, the coach did, and that's part of the reason why I think they had their ultimate breakup there. But this coach, same coach now, obviously we know Mike Vrabel, that's a big deal. If I have Vrabel in this relationship, I probably am thinking, yeah, it's fine. They're going to be fine together. He knows him. He wants to play for him. If it's another coach, I probably have a little bit more reservation about it and thinking, am I going to get the personalities going to clash? Mm-hmm. I think there's been some injuries here or there with him, but he's still a fantastic player. So I think you have to consider it. I mean, you got a young quarterback. There was obviously something going on between A.J. Brown and Jalen Hurts from all the reporting. So you think about that stuff, but I think these organizations and these people usually think, because they're very competitive, it doesn't matter. It'll work for me. I'll make it work. We'll get him in here, and it's going to work here.
Before we get to the Bills, you guys know the line on the New England-Seattle opener?
I have not looked, no.
Got a guess? Sal, do you know it?
I'm going to guess 5.5 Seattle.
I'd like to be different, but I like that number.
3.5.
Wow.
I didn't like – I'm always wrong on the opener. I don't know. I'm sick of it. I'm not retiring from the game because I like it too much, try to guess the schedule.
You're bad at it, and you can't stand that I get it right all the time.
I don't love that either. But, like, you put New England in Seattle after that Super Bowl. I mean, it's a road game now. What's that, 6? I would have guessed that too. 3.5. Let's get – for Bills fans' sakes – New England at 0-1 would be a nice way to start on a Wednesday night this year. And then go to Houston, figure it out. But if they go to Seattle and win, I mean, let's not do this again.
You're behind before week one even really begins.
3.5. Then they have the Steelers. I don't know. Patriots at Bills week 4. And then the rematch in New England week 13. Sal Capaccio on the Wester Hotline. Today was your day this week to check out on the Bills. This player Clayton switching positions is interesting. I'm not sure if that's the lead for you, Sal, but if it is, so be it.
I think so, although I did text Brad Ryder and say, I think I buried the lead with you when I was on with him because Haley Scamura was at practice today. I got to hold a gold medal, so that was a pretty cool part of practice today. Yeah, she was there. It was really cool.
Did you go up to her and just grab it when it was around her neck, or did she take it off?
I did hold it while it was around her neck, but I was in. Someone with the Bills introduced me to her, and we had a conversation, and I said, "Do you mind?" And she's like, "No, of course not." And then someone who was kind of with her team, I would say, said, "Hey, would you like me to take a picture?" I'm like, "Sure, yeah." So took a picture of that, so I got that, and kind of was showing it off, you know, friends and family today. But
so it was consensual.
But it was, but it was more of a. But she did take it off the medal off her neck. To show players, I saw the video of that. I didn't want to ask. That would be a little bit more imposing.
Can I
take it off? And
Right.
But I said, do you mind if I, hold it in my hand? She's like, no, not at all. That was pretty cool, though. Pretty cool to have that. That, to me, was a big part of the practice. But on the field, you're right, Mike. I do think it's a big story. You know, generally at these OTAs, I think what fans really want to know is who's there and did anybody get hurt? Really, honestly, right? Obviously, how did this guy look? How did that guy look? I mean, there's plays that are made and you could talk about and write about and those kinds of things, but it's attendance, who got hurt, and, you kind of go from there. Except when you have something like today where you walk out there and one of the first things you see is, oh, the Bills have a new defender wearing number 67? No, wait, that's Travis Clayton's number. Oh, wait, that is Travis Clayton. He's wearing blue today. He's not wearing white today. He's on the defensive line, not the offensive line. Let's see how this goes. So I have some video. I posted it at the website at WGR550.com, embedded my tweet at Sal Sports if people wanted to see it. I watched him go through, defensive line drills, and I think it's interesting. I don't know why the Bills did it or if it's going to last. Maybe we go out there for mandatory minicamp. And he's back on the offensive side. I have no idea, but I thought it was super interesting today.
What are some of the things that he would – like, what are the biggest challenges to making this switch as you see it?
So first, let's talk about the player. This is the International Pathways Program player the Bills selected 2 years ago. He has yet to play a down in the NFL. He's been on the practice squad for 2 years. He is the reason the Bills actually get 91 players right now instead of 90 because he still counts as an international player. When the Bills drafted him in the 7th round a couple of years ago, his only exposure to any American football was through the NFL Academy in London. And, it was pretty brief, actually, but he had never played college football. So he's pretty raw. I think that can be an actual plus because he hasn't been trained at a certain position his whole life, that he has certain habits that you can't translate. Now, I would say, I think, that when you're dealing with the greatest athletes in the world, especially guys who are 6'7", over 300 pounds, and there are these kinds of athletes, I think they could probably play offensive line or defensive line at an adequate enough level where, you could put them on the field and say they'll be able to stop somebody or at least they'll be able to, stand up to somebody. Whatever, they're not going to be great at it. To me, I think the biggest things that he has, if you're going to do this, first it's footwork where you look and say, okay, it's a totally different type of game where you're generally going backward as an offensive lineman for pass blocking, right? You're going forward as a defensive lineman. Mm-hmm. What's your footwork? What's your lateral footwork? What's going forward, attacking? How does that look? I liked his footwork today. I have some video of him going through the bags and stuff like that. I think the bigger challenge for him is his hands. It is a totally different game trying to fend somebody off on the offensive line with your hands on, you know, the inside and pushing out versus keeping your hands to the outside and, you know, slapping away at somebody, trying to knock somebody's hands down and trying to navigate it that way. I think that's the biggest challenge he would face.
Travis Clayton, we'll keep an eye on him. Pete Carmichael, Sal, it's been a while since we've had an offensive coordinator where we might not be 100% sure what kind of authority they have in this organization, with Sean McDermott being as a defensive coach originally at the top of the organization for so long. What did you get from Carmichael, and what do you think about sort of how, to put it one way, I guess, respectfully, how important he is in all of this?
Well, he certainly has the pedigree. He's been around a long time. He's seen it all. He's been around different organizations. He's, you know, had success and had failures. He's been with great quarterbacks and great running backs. His job as the offensive coordinator under a head coach who is the de facto offensive coordinator is to basically do things that Joe Brady would do when Joe Brady's not available to do those things. When we asked Joe Brady earlier this offseason, what does an offensive coordinator do when they don't call plays? He said, be ready to call plays. So the guy is truly the understudy right. of calling plays. He has to be involved in everything Joe Brady's doing and running meetings and ready to call plays in case Joe Brady says, hey, I got to go deal with the defense. You need to take over here or whatever the situation might be. He's got to be able to do that. He actually did that under Sean Payton. There was a game he talked about earlier this year where he did it for one game and they scored like 50 or 60 points. Not kidding. And like, it was kind of a joke because, oh my God, the guy did such a great job and now everybody wants him to call plays. You know, he wasn't bragging about it. He was doing it as like a funny note, you know, what happened. I just think he brings a wealth of knowledge. He really does. You know, I asked him today about how defenses over the years, since he started 26 years ago in the NFL, like how defenses went from being a little more stagnant to more athletic across the board, multiple, hybrid, and how he's had to evolve as a play caller. And he said, absolutely. And he said, the biggest thing, and I really like this answer. He said, it used to be where you kind of, it was very predictable. When you came out of the huddle, when you went to, you know, the huddle to call play, you kind of knew what they were going to run. He said, you just don't know anymore. So you got to have two or three options every single play to get to for your quarterback and for your team.
Bulldog, you know who the Cy Young, the AL Cy Young favorite is? Even money, last look. Scooble hurt.
It's a Yankee guy.
Cam Schlittler.
Yeah, there it is. Mm. Right, the kid. Yeah.
I feel like this is not nice or anything, but with a name like that, you've got to be pretty mentally tough.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
You know, he probably heard it all.
Yeah.
Schlittler.
So, yeah.
And he's great to watch. I mean, he's got the stuff.
Yeah, so, I loved him when he shut down the Red Sox last year.
Oh, in the playoffs.
That was great.
And then Toronto was right there waiting. I mean, pretty good, Sal. Not a lot
You watch when he pitches, too. He is a bulldog. I could tell he has that mentality,
right? Tough.
Like, yeah, he's a tough dude. And you could tell he brings that with him, and I love that about him, too. And I agree. I think you have to be, as you said, with a name like that. But, I mean, you know, to get to where he is, at the age he is, you know, it shows that he's been through those battles and he's been able to handle it.
Where are home to Cleveland for three, the Yankees. Mm-hmm. And he might be pitching tonight. I think he is, Schlittler. So go see him. Go find him
That'll kill some time until the hockey game gets going.
There you go. Sal, thank you. We'll talk tomorrow.
You got it, guys. Thanks.
It's our Sal Capaccio on the Western Hotline. His appearances are brought to you by New York's only outlet liquor. When you need to stock up, it's the place to buy a case. What's your outlet?
Well, maybe spend another minute on that point I heard from Jeremy or saw on Twitter today about these edge rushers, like elite guys, obviously, who've been moved, and whether the Bills have missed the boat. Easy to say. Is it right? Is it fair? 803-0550. To join us, Mike Schopen, the Bulldog here, WGR.